I mean, you know, you can talk all you want about power pitching and power hitting. But Kevin Barker, games 4 and 5 of the World Series, basically came down to plays at the plate. That's the story of both of those games. Randy Arozarena scoring the winning run on Saturday. And then Manuel Margot attempting to steal home yesterday. The L.A. Dodgers winning the game. They lead 3-2. Have an off day today. Game 6 goes tomorrow. So let's start. I mean, let's deal with Saturday's game first, because that was such a... That ending was just so unexpected and out of this world. So let's just deal with that first. Any issue with the way Dave Roberts managed that game? And in particular, the use of Kenley Jansen in that game.
Yeah, well, I think when you take the starter out, you know, when he took the starter out, that means that pushes everybody up, and you're going to have to use more arms out of the bullpen. The Dodgers, for me, this has been the issue. Now, you can say it's an issue. I'm sure if you ask internally, this is the way they go about winning, is they plot it out before it actually happens, you know, the night before or the day of. And they think about, you know, this guy's going to get 20 to 24 batters. That's the starter. As soon as he gets that 20th batter, that's when we start figuring out what we want to do, when we want to do it, who do we want to bring in, and, you know, when you want to use Kenley Jansen. I've been saying this to you since we started this show this year, is it's going to come down to the Dodgers' two people. That's Kershaw and Kenley Jansen. That's the two people that it was going to come down to. Now, Kershaw seems to figure out whatever, and I think the Dodgers last night told you they weren't going to allow him to mess up because of the sample size. His 30th start in postseason. Yeah, you're not going to get any surprises anymore. The third time through the order for him, you know, there's a big enough sample size there that'll tell you that, you know, he's going to start hanging the breaking ball. He doesn't get the late movement that he has the earlier in the game. The more you see him, the better chance you got of laying off one of the two, getting a good pitch to hit. Sooner or later, he's going to leave one down the middle. Something bad's going to happen. So they took him out. You know, maybe they could have left him in yesterday, one more batter. That you know, look, you know, you trust the guy. He gets two outs, two pitches. Maybe you trust him, get another guy out. But you can't argue the past. The past is what it is. The night before, listen, how many times have you seen Chris Taylor miss the ball in center field? I've never. I've watched quite a few of his games. You know, he's a pretty good defender. He's not usually going to take his eye off the ball. He's going to catch it first and then throw it.
You know, I had somebody that was texting during that game, and his point to me was, it was a remarkable play, but it was completely, like, if you break down each thing, it's easy to explain. Taylor misplay, the throw home, the fact that Jansen wasn't backing up the plate, and the fact that Taylor essentially thought he had to swipe tag. I mean, it's a great play, and it's weird, and it's wonderful, and it's amazing that it happened when it did and that Brett Phillips was involved.
Yeah.
But if you break it down into its component parts, you can actually explain why it happened, can't you?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think if you're the pitcher and you get a 2-strike count against a guy who hasn't played in forever, you know, you don't leave that to chance. You throw something that looks like a strike that ends up a ball. It's two strikes. You know, you let him expand, let him get himself out. If he makes a better pitch there, that's a weak ground ball to second, game over. It's really that simple. Instead, he tries to make a perfect pitch with a cutter. Catches too much part of the plate at 93 miles an hour. Listen, I can hit 93 today. I'm 45. I can get the foot down early.
Mike Zigomanis can hit 93.
I can get it singing enough and get a hit and, you know, maybe beat the shift, that kind of thing. You know, it just seemed to me like in that game, it was a matter of time before he gave it up. I don't know about the feeling you had, but when I was watching that, I was just thinking, it's a matter of time. It just seems like when you put him in those situations, meaning Kenley Jansen, sooner or later he's going to do something that will give that other team a chance to win, no matter the team or lineup he's facing. You could throw Kansas City team out there, and you think sooner or later he's going to throw a pitch he shouldn't be throwing.
We'll be joined, by the way, by Doug Wachter, Rays studio analyst, later on in the show. 590-590 is the text line. Give us your thoughts, your comments on the World Series. Again, Game 6 goes tomorrow night, 8 o'clock on Sportsnet, 590 The Fan and Sportsnet. All right, let's talk about Sunday's game. I like what you said when we came in here and we were just kind of chewing it over before we went on air. The secret you think for the Rays is to get Dave Roberts to make a decision.
Yeah, well, it's more about the Dodgers organization.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Or let me rephrase that. The secret to game six for the Rays is going to be to force them, the Dodgers, to make a pitching decision.
Yeah, earlier.
Earlier.
Julio Urias, that's why would you take him out when you took him out? He had 80 pitches, struck out 9 guys. You know, why are you taking him out on Saturday? Basically, that shows off your weakness more. You know, you don't want to use as many guys in the bullpen. The more you use, better chance. You're not the race. The more chance you got of somebody giving it up, and the more chance you might have of having to use Kenley Jansen. I know that sounds awful, but it's the truth. It's the truth. So, I just think it's more of can the Rays, which you would think they got a pretty good opportunity against the bullpen of the Dodgers, unless the Dodgers lineup just comes out and starts, Lamb-based and Blake Snell all over the yard, and then you're getting at a bullpen a little bit earlier and you get a lead, and we know offensively it'll take some miracles for the Rays to come back, with a 3 or 4 run deficit. It really does. Let's be honest about that. So if they score early, obviously that'll take some pressure off of Dave Roberts and not have to have him thinking – 4 or 5 batters ahead, which is what he does. Like, to say they overthink it is, it is the Dodgers, and it's very hard because of where they've been year after year after year. But sooner or later, got to win one of these. And to do that, I think if you're the Rays, on the flip side of that, you got to figure out a way to score early. Is it put your best guys in the lineup that you think can score some runs? It's going to be a starter righty. You wouldn't think after that, he's probably going to go 3 innings. Gonsolin, he's not going to go probably more than that. He might if he gets some quick outs early, but you got to figure right around 3 innings. Are you going to get lefty after that? So what does Cash do? Does he put in his lefty lineup or his righty lineup? So those are things. G-Man Choi's basically wasted him. In this World Series, really has. Like, he's one of their hotter, better hitters who can hit velocity. And you basically wasted that. You don't really normally say that about the Rays because of the way he hits lefties and whatever. But you would think with a lineup that's struggling the way they are. And occasionally they'll run into one, which is what they're an all-or-nothing team right now. But for me, it's like last night. You put Choi on the on-deck circle, and you don't use him. Like, you're just basically sending him up there for bait. That's a little bit of a head scratcher for me because you're not using your roster to its fullest. Who is, you look down his line when he's over there and you can look down and think, who's the one guy that I want up when it matters? Is it Brasso? Not me. Is it somebody else? Is it Phillips? Not me.
Brasso's had some good hits
He's had one good hit. That's right. Alpha Chapman. And I'm saying, who would you rather have up, Choi or Brasso?
I am generally not a big fan of using my best left-handed hitter when it comes to handling velocity. We've talked about that. I'm not a fan of burning him in a game where I know I'm probably going to see right-handed velocity.
Or you start him and you don't worry about it.
Or you start him.
Which they seem like they don't ever want to do because, he struggles against left-handed pitching.
I mean, Yandy Diaz. Yeah, Kevin Cash is doing what he's done all year. I will say that.
Can't argue
I will
that.
Say that for him. He's doing what he's done all year.
Yeah.
But I would not have burnt G-Man Choi in that particular
situation.
And then
Margo's still at home. For me changed everything.
All right. First of all, let's talk about what it changes in Game 6 because that steal of home. And that out. Obviously, it's a huge play in the game. First of all, did you have an issue with the decision by Margot? See, I didn't have an issue with it.
Yeah,
it didn't work out, and there was risk, I admit.
Well, let me ask you this. What's the chances of that actually working? Well, with who was on the mound, who he was facing?
They say about 39, 40% of the time.
That's not 95%.
No.
Yeah, it's
that's
again. If it would have worked, we would have been coming on here going, "Oh man, that's the greatest play we've ever seen."
Yeah,
how smart was that? And it didn't. It was a collective thing. It was Kiermaier's at the plate before the game. He was 1-for-2 with a big one against Kershaw. Say what you want, he's got a little confidence. You hang a slider to him. Some at bats he looks like he's one of the better hitters in baseball. Other at bats he looks like he's never picked up a bat before. So that's the kind of thing is, you know, he gets a fastball the first pitch, he fouls it off, looks like he's late. You know, if you're Margot, you're sitting over there going, okay, if I can time this up just right, chances of him doubling up on a hitter is probably not good. Analytics will say, no. Mm-hmm. Don't do that. Not going to do that. So probably going to think about getting either a slider or that big swell 12-6 yacker.
Yeah.
So if I can time it up just right, I can almost beat it to the plate. I think that's what he was thinking.
And then Max Muncy, of course, we know that.
Yes, saying step off, that kind of thing. And then he's running over saying, you know, Muncy said home.
And Kershaw said he heard step off.
Well, no good first baseman's going to say runner, because what that will do is rush the pitcher. When the pitcher's rushed,
he's going to balk. Yeah.
So it was probably in a sequence of step off. He's come running, pointing at where the runner's going, which is what players do. They help out the pitcher who's left-handed, who can't see with his back turned. So it's,
yeah, I don't know, Bark. I mean, I like the decision. I really did. I was going to say it's 2020.
Yeah.
But I like the decision. You know, Kershaw does have that exaggerated little sort of stretch and stop. And Margot has seen him enough. He's faced him in the NL West. I didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, I'll say this.
And you know what? Earlier in that at bat, what I found really interesting, there was a camera. I think, was it the same camera shot where they had a shot of Kevin Cash telling him to come off more? Remember, there was a shot of Cash, and he was going like that to the third base coach, like, get him off the base more, get him off the base more.
He wants that because of Kiermaier, you got to throw him slider secondary. He wants
but was
speed
that
him
the same at
down.
Bat?
Yeah, I'm not sure of that. I wasn't really paying enough attention to it. But that's a good eye that you see that.
Yeah, but that, well, yeah, it was. I'm thinking you're playing aggressively there. We were talking about this at home, and I just said to my wife, I like it, man. I like the decision. And, you know, the other thing, yeah, you gave away an out and the possibility of a run. It's early enough in the game you can get that back.
Listening to Kevin Cash in the post-game Zoom, he sounded like if you do it, you better make it. Well, that's a great play if you make it, but if you don't, that's stupid. It's one of those kind of things. But I will say this again. Well, what would have happened if they'd have tied the game there? We just mentioned about getting Dave Roberts and the front office of the Dodgers in the game. How do you – I know Muncy hit a home run the next inning. I get it, 3-2. But what's to say that Glasnow would have thrown him a 3-2 heater? Might have thrown him a spinner, and he might have brought somebody in. You walk him, so what? At least it's a tie game. My point is, if that would have worked, and you put the emphasis on Dave Roberts, but let's face it, that is the thing. If I'm managing, I'm thinking any way I can possibly get that involved. Because their bullpen's not their strength. Who are you going to? How do you match up? When do you start getting the matchup started? Who do you go to first? How do I not get Kenley Jansen in the game? Do I use my lefty? When do I use him? There's righties because they're matchups. You know, can I throw this lefty Gonzalez against the righty? Because he doesn't, his bat angle adds up to his nice little slider he throws. It's like all of these things churning on how. And can you all get them all working together to win a baseball game? I think that's what Kevin Cash is trying to do. You know, he knows offensively they're not the same team. But they can match up with their bullpen. That's why I said this thing's going seven. Like, it screams seven games because the strength is the Rays pitching. The Dodgers pitching is not their strength.
Rays pitching has been –
It's been good enough to win games.
Yeah, you know, it hasn't been as strong as a lot of us thought it would be.
I mean, they are facing the best lineup in baseball.
Correct. And – we got to talk about this, and I want to ask Doug Wachter about this as well. But Kevin, the Dodgers with two strikes, two outs, they've been insanely good with two strikes in this series. They've been that way all year long,
yeah.
But this series in particular, they've been absolutely remarkable. What does that tell you?
I think
top to bottom, there.
I think they have good players, but a lot of that is the players that are good are doing that. The other players aren't really like the Jock Petersons, like the Barneses, like the Chris Taylors. Not really, but it's the other guys. It's
Max Muncy. You pointed out Max Muncy at the start of the series. You told me about Max Muncy at the start of the series, and I thought
he ambushes strikes, spin it. But you know why he can ambush a strike? Because he can hit velo. Nah, he turns around 99 like it is nothing. Like that 3-2 pitch is 99. You know, caught middle of the way a bunch of the plate. It's still 99, Jim.
Yeah.
You're not, I mean, he's getting the head out that thing like it's nothing.
Is that just he's compact swing?
I just remember when I played, and like, again, I didn't see that hard of velo that often, but you got to get it going. Like, I got to start this. That's the first thing hitting coaches would say to you. Better get going. Get it going early. The guys that hit velocity don't. Mookie Betts, it's like nice, free and easy. Not occasionally he'll chase because he's trying too hard, but it's like just free and easy. 99 will let it travel a little bit, and then I'm just going to snap the wrist. And Max Muncy, Seager. Seager has – now, I knew Seager was good, but it's one thing of doing it then and doing it now.
Yeah,
and now that the word's out that you're hot and you're healthy and you can basically hit anything, and the approaches that they have. Look, hitting with runners in scoring position I think is a lot of luck. I really do. But you can have luck with a good approach, and I think they have both.
What's this I told you? Free agents after next year. Baez, Story, Lindor, Seager.
Okay, rate them one through three.
Well, not, there's not four.
I know, but...
For me? Wow.
I don't really want Seager because I think the health issues are not...
Okay, you can disagree with this.
Okay.
I go one Lindor, two Baez, three Seager, four Story. That's the way I'm going.
Yeah, well, I like the switch hitter, obviously. I think he's a total package. Now, he's going to cost you more than the other guys. I like Trevor Story, too. I think Trevor Story can backspin balls, which is, you know, that's an art. The you know, because you play in Coors Field, you still got to play on the road. He doesn't take the Coors Field thing on the road. That's the backspin, and that's the, you know, Nolan Arenado, he's been around him. He understands, you know, you can have a flat bat path and still hit balls hard all over the yard. So I kind of like him. Baez, he's a free swinger. He's streaky. I'm not sure that fits in with the Blue Jays. We'll go to the Blue Jays. So this is just me. I would go Lindor, Story, Baez, Seager.
Okay.
The Seager thing, I love Seager, but the health issues, you know, for me to move a guy to second that they have
there
now,
he
has to play every day, and yes. I don't think Seager can do that.
That is a great point.
Yeah.
If you're going to bring a guy in and move Bo Bichette,
yeah.
you don't want Bo moving back to
and
shorts,
to
playing
back
shortstop 45 games a year because the guy's hurt.
There you go.
I agree with you.
Yep.
I agree with you completely there. Got to say something about Brett Phillips. Look, you played in the minors a lot. You bounced around in the majors a bit. What went through your mind watching a guy like that come through in that situation? It's not like, he didn't scorch the ball, but he did what he had to do.
Okay, well, just to give a little something on his background here. Had gone 28 days without a hit, 17 days since last plate appearance. Both are all-time records prior to walk-off hit in a World Series game. He had a .196 average in a regular season. That's lowest in MLB history by a player to produce a World Series walk-off. It's impossible. Like to say that Brett Phillips should have walked out and played the lottery if he could have gotten out, because I know they're in the bubble.
Right.
But if you could call somebody and say, can you go play the lottery for me? It's, you know, now he choked up, which is with two strikes, because you know what you're getting probably with two strikes. Again, it's a bad pitch, and if it would have been a little bit more in, that's a jam shot to second and the game's over. But you give him credit. He choked up because he knew what was probably
coming.
He
was ready for what?
Giving himself a chance. That's all you can do pinch hitting. And the pinch hitting, you're not going to make a living. I tried to make a living when I was a little older doing that. Mindset-wise, and you know, I never went this long between at-bats like he did, but it's just, what do you look for? Marquise Grissom always told me, go up and swing at the first strike. What if I don't like ball in? If I don't like ball in, I can't hit the ball in. Why am I swinging a strike in? You have to learn that, right? So that is about 99% luck, and that other 1% was him choking up, knowing it's probably coming, and I got to try and do all I can do to get barrel to baseball, and it worked out. Good for him.
Yeah, it was a great moment. It really was a great moment in a terrific World Series full of all sorts of storylines. Doug Wachter is the Fox Sports Rays analyst. We've had him on before. He is a pitch for the Rays for a long time. Always enjoy his insight. He'll join us next. It's Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Breaking news from the Canadian Football League. David Brayley, the owner of the BC Lions, essentially person who underwrote much of the CFL during its difficult days, and is probably responsible for the fact that two franchises are still operating. David Braley passed away at the age of 81 today. We'll have more on that with Stephen Brunt, who known David Braley for a long time. And he'll join us on Writer's Block immediately following this show. And we extend condolences to the entire CFL community and to the family of David Braley. 590-590 is the text line. A couple of people want to know about what was going on with Clayton Kershaw's pants last night. He kept tucking them in all the time. I don't know. Maybe his belt was broken. The Dodgers have had issues with pants, man. Between Walker Buehler's Lululemon tights and Clayton Kershaw's overalls.
That's not my wheelhouse. I couldn't tell you about that.
Frank from Stony Creek. The World Series have been fantastic. Every game has been eventful. 3-2 games come down to wire. I find myself this whole time thinking Dodgers are dominating. It feels like the series is 5-1.
Yep.
That's a hell of a point. It really does. It feels like the Dodgers should have swept this by now. I mean, it just feels like everything about the games, other than Randy Arozarena lying at home plate going like that, has been Dodgers. It really has.
Yeah, I really do believe that the Dodgers winning and that getting that guy at home plate on the steal attempt kept Walker Buehler from pitching tomorrow.
Okay, explain that.
Well, but coming back on short rest, what are you going to get? You know, Walker Buehler.
If the Rays win, they're up 3-2. You got to bring Walker Buehler back on
think
short
so.
Rest.
Of course, that's your best guy. Right. You're bringing it, which he's probably not good at. You know, you're probably location is a big deal for him. Locating the 98 to 100 with the breaking stuff and you know where he can go in and out to lefties and righties. Can he do that on short rest? Who knows? You know, you bring him on regular rest. You're thinking game seven. I have a huge advantage because this is probably going to keep Kenley Jansen out of the game. That's really what it is. Mm-hmm. But if not having that and having to use him in game seven because you would use him in game six, that was just huge. Because again, all of the things that go on with the Dodgers have something to do with they're putting the wrong guy in at the wrong time or they're taking out their guy too early. Just so they have to bring in somebody they really don't want to bring in. That's still at home for me. I think, again, it could have went either way. If he's safe, it helps the Rays. If he's out, it helps the Dodgers. Just so happens he was out.
Yeah, it's there's so many things that you wonder about. If he steals home, what does that do to Kershaw? There's so many ways it could go.
It's like the Muncy 3-2 pitch from Glasnow. Would you throw him a fastball down the middle or would you throw him a breaking ball? You walk him, you got an arm loose in the bullpen. That's a leverage arm. You're not bringing in, you know, Yarborough. You're bringing in Anderson.
Oh, it is interesting how that one decision by Manuel Margot, the trickle down effect that decision had. Again, for the record, I asked this on social media and you can respond 590-590 is a text line. A lot of people, I'm kind of a little surprised at this. A lot of people love the play.
Yeah.
By Manuel Margot. And then they all say the same thing. You know, the caveat, right? If it works, he's got the biggest balls of anybody in the planet. Doesn't work, well, it wasn't a great decision. But I liked it.
I don't know about you, Jeff, but coming into this, you would think the big edge went to the Dodgers. The Rays had to do something that we hadn't really seen before.
Yep.
That was one of them. They tried it and it didn't work.
Yep. Let's bring in Doug Wechter. He's a Rays studio analyst with Fox Sports Sun. Doug, thanks so much for joining us. Boy, there's a lot to talk about. Those are two terrific games. But I wanted to ask you about the Manuel Margot, the attempt to steal at home from your point of view. As I said, I mean, I've covered baseball since 86, and I loved it. I mean, I loved the play, and I know he was out and everything, but man, it was close. And I just thought it was something the Rays had to do.
Yeah, what's up, boys? Well, thanks for having me on again. You know, I love coming on the show. And, nothing like talking about attempt of stealing home in game five to kick it off, man. You start dissecting that play. And first of all, the fact that the Rays are just struggling, stringing together hits right now through the series. I mean, you got a team that's really getting all their runs through the home run. And, you know, Kershaw at that point was struggling a little bit, man on first and third and no outs. Well, all of a sudden he locks it in. You got two quick outs. You got Margot on third base. And I think what happened was he's basically watching Kershaw and that huge elongated setup that he has, right? When he comes set, he's got that long arm stroke that comes set. It takes forever. And also the fact that he's looking directly at first base. I think Margot just felt like you could, you know, one of two things, either take home plate cleanly, you know, go ahead and steal home plate home. And then also I think he was trying to get him to balk, which honestly, after you think about the play, I thought it was good. I think that the Rays needed to try to do something to generate a run at that point. It didn't look great with Kiermaier up and Kershaw on the mound getting dialed in. So to try to steal that bag and try to force that balk play, I wasn't against it at all. I thought it was something they wanted to try to do, and it just didn't work out for them. But, you know, kudos to Kershaw for staying calm, being able to step off and throw the ball to home plate, you know, exactly like a pitcher should. Because, honestly, you don't practice that stuff throughout the year, right? You practice it maybe in spring training a little bit. But when you go into the playoffs and then the World Series, the last thing you're thinking is, you know, some team trying to get you to balk. So for Kershaw to stay calm, be able to deliver that out, you know, kudos to him, man. He did a great job.
Yeah. What do you think next year? You know, with the way the Rays handle pitching, how do you think Tyler Glasnow will look next year? Will it be an extra pitch? Will it be something different in his windup? You know, something's got to change a little bit. The attack in the strike zone and throwing so many non-competitive pitches. Yeah, I get it, who he's doing it against, but it's a little bit of a theme. But the Rays are excellent at, you know, making a little change. What do you think that little change will be?
Yeah, well, that's a great question because, I mean, this is no surprise. You know, Glasnow, 6'8" power pitcher, features two pitches, right? He's going to rip that fastball up to triple digits about 65% of the time, and then he's going to go behind it with just that snapdragon curveball. And those are the two pitches that he features. The biggest problem is if he's not landing that curveball in the strike zone, you see what happens, right? And through the postseason, that's been the trend. I mean, he's given up 9 home runs in 29 innings this postseason, and every single one of them has been on the fastball. So what's going on is that he's not landing that curveball in the zone. So these hitters, even though it's a fastball bumping 100 miles an hour, they're able to time that up. And these Dodgers are obviously probably the best offense that he's seen all year. So if you go out against any team, you guys know as well as anybody, if you only got one pitch, unless you're Mariano Rivera, guys are going to be able to time it up. And that's what we're seeing from Glass. I think next year, you're right, Kyle Snyder, you know, this guy's a magician as a pitching coach. I think he's going to go out there and work and utilize the changeup a little bit more. And that's the kicker to this whole season, really. You want to go back to regular spring training. That was the one pitch he was going to work on during the first spring training and throughout the course of the year. But with COVID and everything else that happened in a shortened season, he just wasn't able to really introduce that pitch into his scheme, right? So he was forced to stick with the top two pitches, couldn't really work on that changeup, didn't have time to do it, and it's come back to bite him a little bit here in the playoffs.
Doug, do you think he can throw a normal changeup, circle change, giant fingers? Is a guy with giant fingers, is that hard? Is that a hard pitch for him to throw, the circle change?
Yeah, I think it is. I really do think it is. You know, I'm a guy who struggled in my career with the changeup, with the circle change. I could never get it consistent. I think it's because, obviously, I do have a little bit bigger hands. But similar to Glasnow, you know, I was a power pitcher. Now, I didn't throw as hard as him, but I was more of a max effort guy, kind of like Glass is. And a lot of times you get guys like that, they don't have feel, right? They don't have the exact same feel that you would have on that changeup. You don't. You really got to pronate that release toward the end and create that spin, right? Create the revolutions on the pitch. And I don't know if Glasnow was able to do that. That's why I always considered him more of a split finger guy, possibly pick up that split finger and maybe utilize it almost like a Curt Schilling used to do with his, where you're throwing the fastball, you know, up in the zone, you throw that split finger, let that thing rip, you know, right down the middle and drop off the table. That could be a devastating pitch for Glass. And, you know, I think he's been tinkering around with it. He's really trying to stick with the changeup, but, you know, that split finger is definitely going to be something that he's going to think about moving forward.
Doc, what do you think explains the Dodgers' ability to hit with two strikes in this series? It's a great lineup. They're great hitters, but You know, I haven't watched a series where I, you know, team gets the batters at two strikes and I start sweating, man, because now I know that something's going to happen. I, you know, that's not the way we're used to seeing baseball these days.
Right. No, you're exactly right. And, you know, going into this series, you're thinking, okay, well, not only just two strikes, but two outs. Yeah. I mean, these guys are just never out of it. They're never done. They've got over 50 runs this postseason with two outs. And you look at the lineup, and honestly, I was jumping in and dissecting this lineup before we got here in Arlington. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, the Rays just went up against the Yankees. Then they went up against Houston. Those are two really good offenses, right? Well, then you look at the Dodgers, and I mean, top to bottom, all the way through, you got Jock Peterson hitting in the eight hole half the time. And this guy's, you know, he's got some big time pop. And it's just the way they stagger this lineup. You can't go out and do your matchups, right? The Rays are built on pitching matchups, okay? Defense and just stopping the run. And what the Dodgers are so good at is staggering that lineup with right-handers, left-handers, right-handers, left. And every one of them is talented. Every one of them can drive it out of the park. They can string together hits. And here's the kicker. Like you just said, they don't give up. They get two strikes and they dial it in, right? They don't just try to hit it out of the ballpark. Instead, you know, they're happy with driving it in the gap. They're happy with just making hard contact. And when you're used to seeing teams still take the approach of, okay, I got two strikes, I'm still going to try to hit this thing out, you know, like the new age baseball, nobody's really worried about just putting the ball in play. Well, that's not the Dodgers. I mean, the Dodgers are built on hard exit velo, and, you know, they're showing it all the way through two strikes. And unless you're locating just as well on the second strike and third strike of the at-bat as you did on the first, then these guys are going to take advantage of it. And, you know, throughout this series, every single time we've seen the Dodgers come through in clutch situation, it's because the pitchers are just trying to do a little too much with two strikes and haven't been able to execute.
Okay, Blake Snell last time, for me, when I was watching him early in the game, he's an expand guy. He wants to get you to chase, but it looked to me like the slider curveball. He wanted to throw that more for a strike, you know, not so much down the middle as of, you know, a little down, a little in, a little away, that kind of thing, and then expand when he got ahead in the count. Do you think he can take that approach and do it this time? Again, we just mentioned the lineup that they have, adjustments that they make. Can a guy that's left-handed go in against that same team and do it 5 days later?
Yeah, you know, I really hope so. I really do, because, I mean, look, going at this team, the one way you can beat them is you got to pitch to contact. And it's a scary thing to say when you got guys like Seager, you know, Turner, Muncy just crushing the cover off the ball, not to mention Mookie Betts, you know, at the top of the lineup. But this is a team in the Dodgers who had the second lowest chase rate throughout all of 2020, right? So what that tells you is they wait for their pitches. I mean, they grind at bats. They wait for you to make a mistake, and then they capitalize. But if you're pitching to contact, right, you're trying to get early contact, you're in the zone early and then expanding late, that's how you're able to expose them just a little bit. That's what we saw in Blake's outing the first time out against these Dodgers. And, you know, Blake Snell is one of those guys who you can throw Blake against a team multiple times in a row, and he can dominate the lineup because he's got four positive, I mean, solid pitches, you know, plus pitches. As long as he's pitching off that fastball and then utilizing the slider curveball, he can go out there and really carve a lineup up and down, you know, top to bottom. But that's what he's going to have to do. He's going to have to go out there, throw strikes early in the count, and then utilize that changeup a little bit against the right-handers. But the slider curveball, you got to get nasty with those two pitches, and you got to get these guys to expand the zone a little bit late in the count, or you're playing right into the Dodgers' hands.
Okay, you being an ex-pitcher, you being a fan of baseball, has Clayton Kershaw's last two starts changed your mind of how you feel about him when it matters?
Yes. Yep. 100% it has. I mean, this guy's taking the ball game one. This guy is now taking the ball game five. And, I mean, let's look into that last outing that he had, right? That's coming off of a game four where it was the most dramatic win I ever seen in baseball, right? The World Series, I've never seen anything like that live in my life. You know, the way that Brett Phillips came in there, got the pinch hit. You know, I had to go on the post game show 2 minutes after that happened. I think I was screaming at the monitor, just yelling at. I was so excited, man. I'd never seen anything like it. I didn't go to bed until about 3 a.m., just staring at the wall, trying to figure out if it really happened. But then you think about, you know, what Kershaw had to go through. So the night before, he's watching that game, and the Dodgers were going to be potentially up 3-1 to where he's going to go ahead and clinch in game five. Well, then you lose in dramatic fashion, and Kershaw now has to take the ball in a tied series and basically start all over. You got essentially a three-game series left, and he's, you know, he's starting game five, and he has to put the Dodgers right back to where they can have the advantage. And that's what he did, man. He went out there, and, you know, he looked a little bit shaky earlier in the game. I thought we had some good hard contact early in the game. But after he settled in, he, you know, standard veteran pitcher who's a future Hall of Famer, this guy dialed it in, was able to get 5 2/3 in there, and it looked really sharp. And I think he is, you know, in the postseason, he has turned it around to where he's a big-time performer.
Doug, was really good of you to join us. Terrific insight, man. Thanks so much.
Yeah, great stuff. Thank you.
Anytime, boys. You guys have a great day.
You too. It's Doug Wechter, Rays studio analyst with Fox Sports Sun. Terrific discussion on Tyler Glasnow, boys, by the way.
Yeah, I look, just watching his stuff, for whatever reason, I understand it's who he's facing. But for some reason or the other, his 99 to 101 doesn't play. Why is that? Like, you're seeing too many good swings off of that pitch when you should be either really late or really early. I got to cheat to get to it, or I'm late because it's so hard and it has tremendous life to it that I just can't catch up to it. You don't see that. I mean, sometimes you will if he's facing a right-handed hitter that hits down in the order, but top-of-the-order guys just don't seem to be really thinking his fastball gets him trouble, which is just odd. And that'll tell you, Jeff, I think you've said it and I've said it too, that third pitch, just you have to trust that – okay, there it is. I see it out of the hand. It looks exactly like the fastball. And then you're starting to see weirder chase swings. And until he gets that, maybe we won't see that guy.
I don't know if Joe and Port Colborne or Jimmy Cotton Niagara Falls know each other.
Yeah.
But they got the same question they want to ask you. And we're going to get that when we come back. It's Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, 590-590 is the text line. I threw this out in social media about Manuel Margot and his attempted steal at home. And most of you that responded have, and maybe it's just because we like the excitement of it, but most of you are okay with it. And I think Kevin Cash handled it the right way in the post-game news conference. And it's right. If it works, it's one of the greatest plays of all time. If it doesn't, it's not one of the greatest plays of all time. And you've helped run your team potentially out of an inning. But again, in that situation, you know, you touched on it, and Doug Wechter did too. It's not like they're stringing together hits.
Yeah, yeah.
And dude's fast. Like, Manuel Margot can fly. And you know what? And I'll tell you what, I think he was so jacked up after getting to third base in that play.
Yeah.
That he's, you know.
And a little bit of that is too, when it's first and third, if you've noticed, Kershaw does the slide step.
Yeah.
So he's trying to, he knows that the way he's going to throw it to home. If he's going, he's thinking, okay, first pitch fastball, he fouls it off. I just mentioned that. Chances of him throwing a spinner is pretty good here.
Real good.
And with the way he slide steps, if I'm going to do this because of my speed, I got to get a, not such a big lead, but a bigger lead where they don't notice and time it up just right. I mean, he was this close to making it.
It was very close. All right, yeah. This is Joe and Port Colborne. I want to give a shout out to a couple of you guys here. Joe and Port Colborne and Jimmy Cotton, Niagara Falls. Joe's question regarding the Margot attempt. This tells me you guys must have played baseball or were watching baseball. If Renfro knew that was going to happen, he should have taken a few quick steps towards second. It would have thrown Kershaw off when everyone is screaming he's going. That's from Joe and Port Colborne. Jimmy Cotton, Niagara Falls. Hey, boys, do you think the runner at first should have given himself up so Margot could score? Maybe a fake pickoff or a fake steal just to get him home. Thanks. So both those guys are on the same page. I wasn't thinking of it at the time, but I want to know what you were thinking. And here's the other thing. You played first base, so you know what Max Muncy's thinking in that time
Here's what I'll say to that. I think that the runner at third base and the runner at first base were not on the same page. If the runner at first base knew that the runner at third base was going to try that, he might go and do a fake steal where Kershaw maybe flops one over to first and he can try and steal that way. You're trying to beat the throw from first baseman instead of beating the pitcher to home plate. I just think that's way too much too many things can go wrong there. Basically what Margot's trying to do is element of surprise. I'm trying to catch you off guard. Just so happens the first baseman was paying attention.
He surprised his own base runner too on the other side.
Yeah. It's the whole thing of I'm trying to, I don't want to let the cat out of the bag. I don't want to let that guy know, because if that guy knows, he might give it away, and then this guy knows, and then it's an easy play to get me out. If nobody knows and I just go on my own, I got a better chance of making it that way.
And of course, it wasn't as put, the play wasn't put on by the coaching staff, so it's not like there's a sign.
But Kevin Cash didn't know it's coming.
FP Santangelo told me this one time, and I don't know, and I'm trying to think of what the other two players on the Expos, they had their own signs.
I think you'd have to done it before.
FP and two other guys, so that in a situation where you were going to do something on your own, you'd let other guys know. Now, I'm just asking you, have you heard that guy? You know, and it could be anything, right? It can be wipe the bottom of your nose whatever.
That's more of the first baseman, the runner at first base wanting to steal.
Okay.
And then you're trying to get the catcher to throw through. The runner at third base got a little decent speed, can shuffle off, go when the throw is thrown through.
So that would be called by the runner at first base.
It could be like a double steal kind of thing, but you're waiting until it goes through. Now, the runner at third base has to have a pretty good lead, a little bit of a good jump, and some halfway decent speed for those things to take place. And again, this is you're doing this against the guy Kershaw and a pretty good, headsy up team.
Yeah.
Smart team. Things are going to have to go exactly perfect for that to go right. And look, going into this series, they had to do something. Something had to go right. Like the game before that, Chris Taylor had to bobble that ball. Max Muncy had to throw a change up to home plate. Will Smith had to swipe tag.
Like.
Yeah. Because of the changeup sink to the ball for Max Muncy, he was trying to swipe tag and didn't realize
Jansen
the guy
had to be up third baseline. Yeah.
I'm not real sure the Kenley Jansen thing matters. Randy's fast. He's got good speed. He's very athletic. I even if he was back there, he'd have to be basically standing right on top of the catcher for him to catch it, flip it back to the catcher.
That's fair.
So I think people are just digging at that. Me personally, I just don't think if you throw a cutter basically down the middle, you wouldn't have to worry about any of that.
What do we need to see from Blake Snell tomorrow night?
Look, I don't think he ain't going deep in the game. I think if he gives you what Kershaw gave him, 5 2/3, their bullpen's good enough to shut down the Dodgers lineup. It really is. You got to put pressure on the Dodgers. Now, the Dodgers aren't going to have a ton of pressure, but they know if this goes to game 7, there's zero pressure on the Rays. The Rays have to think about nothing. Like, you're playing on house money. All the pressure's on the Dodgers. So, I think Blake Snell has to establish strikes with his secondary pitch, expand a little bit with the heater. His heater's got a little run to it. Mm-hmm. He can elevate the heater. He wants to play and nibble with the strike zone. But to do that, he has to command early with something spinning and for strikes. Like getting the Max Muncy to take strike one with the breaking ball down and away and then expand with that. If he can do that, he'll give them 5+ innings and then turn it over to that bullpen. For me, I think this is going 7. I just don't trust Dave Roberts, the organization of the Dodgers to game plan enough to throw out 7 different pitchers and have that thing work.
Well,
that's just me.
And they're starting Tony Gonsolin. So you've got to figure with the off day. Like who would be the number 2 guy out of there after that for you? Wasn't it May the last time?
Yeah, but it's not going to be him because of what he threw. Urias, maybe?
Urias,
that'll be one of the – and then a lot of things have to go right. Offensively, they got to score runs early. For me, if the Dodgers want to win game 6, and I'm a little jealous. I'm wanting greed because I want the Morton Buehler in
game
7.
You really want that in game 7.
I do. I just want tension. And Dave Roberts is going to show up and go, we've been here before. What's going to happen? I just want it.
You know what would be great? If you had Morton and Buehler in game 7 and both managers said, screw it, we're just going to let these boys go. Forget it. We're going to let them go. As long as we're in the game, we're going to let them go. If you're hanging around and it's the 8th inning, God love you. We're going to let you go.
I think it's wishful thinking.
2020, man. Yeah, it is. It's extreme wishful thinking. So, if you are Dave Roberts, you've had the off day. I already said Dustin May probably isn't the second guy. How do you use Blake Treinen in game 6? Is he your guy?
I think he has to come in with a lead. You know, I would rather use Kenley Jansen early. Like when I bring out my starter and we're up 2-1, I want to use Kenley Jansen then.
Okay.
Give him a little bit of confidence where it doesn't matter. If he gives up a run, I still have an offense that can come back and do that. I'm not going to give him the ball in the ninth inning with a one-run lead. We're not going through that again.
Because, see, I don't think there's any way in hell Dave Roberts doesn't use Kenley Jansen at some point in the next two games. I just don't think he does.
I'm with you. But, you know, does he have enough spine to do it when it matters in game 7 in the eighth inning with him up or tied a run? Oh, man, like just to say that, is it fair to his team? Yeah, is it fair to his team to do that? No, forget about doing it for the player. Is it fair for his team? His team's worked hard to get here.
Yeah,
not for
me. I don't know, man.
If I'm the manager, it's not for me. If I'm going to use him, it's going to be early.
I think he's...
At least I used you.
You know, he's there's this thing there, right? It's my guy. It's my guy with Kenley Jansen. I don't know. If it's me, at this stage, I do whatever I can to avoid using him. I really do. You know what? If I win the World Series, very few people are going to be asking me, why didn't you use Kenley Jansen when you won the World Series? They're going to be happy.
I would say we won the World Series.
Exactly. Exactly.
That would be my answer.
The only way this backfires on you, well, I don't even know if it does. If you don't win the World Series and haven't used Kenley Jansen, it's one of those fascinating subplots. And I don't, again, if it's me, I've seen enough right now. And I've seen enough from the Rays, because there's some funky stuff going on there.
Yeah.
I'm thinking to myself, okay, I'm with you. The only way I get Kenley Jansen in there is early.
I don't
want him in the eighth or ninth inning. I'll go with Brusdar.
Baez.
Gratterall.
Baez, yeah. Joe Kelly.
I'm not certain I'd go with Gonzalez anymore either.
I might stay away from him a bit. Got good pitches. Left-handed. Got good pitches. Like,
yeah.
I can just picture G-Man Choi coming up after Kenley Jansen walked a guy and hitting a 2-run homer.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, though. I think Urias might be the guy. He could be the whole key to making this work for Dave Roberts.
They score a bunch of runs early. They won't have to worry about it. That'll be the interesting thing. It's keeping the – when do I take him out? He's already let the cat out of the bag by saying our starter gets 20 to 24 batters. I don't know why you'd tell people that. But that's what he said. So you got to figure that's what they're getting. They're not getting pitches. They're getting batters. Who's he using next?
It is an off day for the World Series. Tomorrow will be game 6. Mr. Barker's already boldly predicted we're going to have a 7th game.
Wishful thinking.
I am less inclined to agree with you in this one, but what the hell? I thought the series was over earlier, and learned not to discount my Rays. You'll notice I haven't said Rays up lately. We will be back tomorrow and get you set for the aforementioned Game 6. Don't go anywhere. Lots of baseball talk ahead. Jeff Passan joins us on Writer's Block. Ariel Helwani, got to talk a little MMA. Tim Leeper and Dan Graziano as well.